the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome to the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill Cameron is going to be joining us on the phone. I'm Dan Peck. I sometimes work here. I've been gone all week on an excursion with the Troy Trojans women's basketball team, but thank you for joining us. We have Bill, right? Drew's at the controls, doing a great job as always. Bill, what's up?
Who is this now? Who is this I'm talking to?
This is Dan Peck. He occasionally appears.
I've heard that name. I've heard that name. Oh man, how you been doing?
I'm doing okay. Cherokee was an adventure. I've never been. I've been around Boone and Asheville before, just briefly, and it had been a while since I'd been to Asheville. But this was mostly based around the Cherokee Casino and Resort in Cherokee, North Carolina. The Cherokee Invitational was the event that it's a bunch of high school teams, AAU teams. There are some D1 teams that play a tournament as well. This is the third year they've done this event, and it was a real. I don't know. We had a real good time. The Trojans played. It was a loaded field too. Toledo's a very good mid-major. Arkansas out of the SEC is a perennially good team, although they're sort of rebuilding this year with a lot of additions from the portal and some younger players. And Liberty, who's been, there's a mid-major top 25, and Liberty's always, a part of that poll. So it was a tough field. Trojans lost the first game to Toledo, just fourth quarter didn't go their way. But then the Trojans turned around and led bell to bell against Arkansas. Practically bell to bell. Arkansas came back and took the lead briefly in the third quarter. But Troy was the better, tougher team, and they beat Arkansas last night. It's a big win for the Trojans as they conclude non-conference play and get ready to take on the JMU Dukes. It's top two teams in the conference squaring off to begin league play this year. So it's a nice win before you go into Christmas.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good way to come away with that. So glad that you're back. Yeah, I've been I have definitely been under the weather this week. So I'm on my third day doing the show from the house. So I think better for everybody. So, hopefully everything's fine by Christmas. So this is the final show that we have before Christmas because we are off next week. Really appreciate the opportunity to have the week off. So we've got a lot to get to today, Dan. Man, since you have been gone,
you want a brief list of things that have happened. So I feel like when I left, Reagan was president, and the things that have happened. Auburn found a quarterback. I haven't been on the show since the Jackson Arnold thing became official.
Goodness. Auburn, if that's right. If you haven't been on since the Jackson Arnold news was official, Auburn's picked up about eight additions from the transfer portal since then. Two quarterbacks, a running back, two offensive linemen, including a proven left tackle. They've added a defensive lineman, a linebacker, at least one in the secondary, and both a punter and a kicker.
When I left, Jani Broome's shoulder was fine.
Oh yeah.
Fortunately,
it's going to be fine, and he just needs to rehab it. Even a possibility that he plays tomorrow, although I'd be surprised.
That's the exact word I used on the Observer podcast with Justin to describe, like, if I think, you know, Jani Broome's, yeah, I think that the news was mostly good coming out of a really scary looking injury.
Oh, yeah.
Early in that game against Georgia State, but I would still use the word surprised to describe seeing Jani Broome in the game tomorrow. It's just, you know how shoulders are, Bill. Like the risk of re-aggravation because you feel good and you come back a little too early. I have no idea about the details with Jani Broome. Like, not a doctor. Didn't even stay in the whatever bill, right? Like, but it's but Janai, I think I'd be a little bit surprised to see him tomorrow, and yeah, it makes that Purdue matchup all the more interesting if Janai can't go.
Oh yeah, you're right. I mean, it was great to see Chaney Johnson with the opportunity to step up and have the ball game that he did. But yes, now the pressure's really on the front court. If Janai can't go, can Chaney and Dillon stay out of foul trouble?
Do you see more Turtle Hudson in the absence of Janai Broome? I think so too. I think that's when Chaney's at the five, right? It's probably going to be Turtle Hudson at the four, which is a small but tough athletic lineup inside, right? Especially offensively, like both of those guys that, you know, maybe they're not 7'2", but they'll stick their nose in and they will go right to the rim.
Oh yeah, and Turtle got as many minutes. He got as many minutes the other day against Georgia State as he'd gotten in about a month. So good that you know, that you've got somebody like that that you can go to. I mean, he's an experienced guy and knows how to use that thick body that he has. So yeah, I think we'll definitely see more of Turtle tomorrow.
Yeah, and then the question of you know, I think the evolution of Jakai Howard, right? Like, obviously, Tahad, you know, week by week, game by game, getting better and making, you know, more and more of an impression on these games. But Jakai Howard is in the rotation right now, and he is it's electric when he gets in.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I mean, he's still got some work to do defensively, but he can definitely make things happen. He is... he's definitely a spark when he comes in. He can explode to the rim, and he's shown really good touch. I mean, he's got a really good 3-point shot as well.
So are we going to try? Are we going to try Barrett? By the way, are we going to try We can conference him in, right? We can do that. Don Dunn. I think we're going to play it safe with Coach Dunn and sort of leave him out of the studio today. And so
yeah, he texted me and said that he'd probably just take it off.
Yeah, and so we'll call him and try to conference him in at some point in the show too.
Yeah, I mean, because hey, there's other news. I mean, Auburn has had one assistant coach, Josh Aldridge, left to be defensive coordinator at East Carolina, and Auburn has filled his spot, but there's another spot open, and this is a big hole to fill as co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach Charles Kelly is headed to Jacksonville State to take over the spot that was left open when Rick Rodriguez went back to West Virginia.
What do you think of Charles Kelly getting the job at Jacksonville State? What do you think of that as a move by Jacksonville State?
I think it's a great move by Jacksonville State. Charles Kelly is somebody that everybody in this state knows. All the coaches in the state of Alabama know him. He is, he has a great track record as an assistant coach and as a recruiter. I mean, the concern right now for Auburn is, you know, how do you fill his spot? He is considered one of the best recruiters in the country. And, you know, immediately there was some response from three of Auburn's signees for this class: Eric Winters, Newboy Fagan, and Blake Woodby, all expressing, you know, their disappointment that Charles Kelly is leaving Auburn. Now, Eric Winters has said, you know, he understands those kinds of things happen, and he's still got a job to do at Auburn. But you have to feel, you know, a little nervous about this, because these days there's no more, you know, there are no more guarantees that players are going to stay put anywhere if there are any changes.
Yeah, and you don't. I hope nobody feels misled in this situation, because this was sort of a series of dominoes that started with West Virginia firing Neil Brown and then going and getting Rich Rod, which opened this job up. I don't think Charles Kelly, I can't speak for him, but I didn't get the impression that he was planning on leaving, you know, all along or something like this. This is a head coaching job that opened up. We wondered about other members of Auburn staff potentially being in the mix for head coaching jobs at the mid-major level in college football. We talked about Durkin maybe being back in consideration if he wanted to. Although, you know, we also said being a coordinator these days at the SEC might be a better gig than being a head coach at the mid-major level. You know, so you know, we'll see. But Charles Kelly gets to be a head coach, like you said, in a part of the part of the state, part of the country that he knows extremely well.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's something that just makes sense for Charles. Again, now Hugh Freeze has got to find a replacement there. I mean, I don't think there'll be a terrible job of finding some willing applicants with the talent that Auburn has back there in the secondary. So it'll be interesting to see how long this one takes. But no, I agree with you. This is not something like we used to see after the February signing day, where all of a sudden there'd be a lot of coaching moves, and you felt like, man, these guys knew they were going somewhere, and they were just holding off until players signed. No, that's nothing like what this is, because as you said, there was no way of foreseeing that the Jack State job was even going to be open until Rich Rod left to go back to West Virginia.
Auburn also landed two tackles in the portal since I left. I mean, that's in the. I mean, as you know, you talked about, you listed off some of the spots, but I mean, we talked even acknowledging the critical importance of upgrading at quarterback, or at least shopping at the top of the market at quarterback this offseason, you still needed to add on the offensive line probably just as urgently. And Auburn goes and gets two guys who profile, you want to be careful, but profile as starters on next year's team. I would imagine that at the moment they're at the top of, they will be at the top of the Bill Cameron depth chart the next time it's updated.
Yeah, they are. As a matter of fact, Xavier Chaplin, I think, is about as close to a sure thing as you could get. He was an honorable, he was a third-team All-American as a freshman. And this past year, even despite some injuries, still made some All-ACC teams, and he has played left tackle and graded very well there for 2 years. So, you know, he's the prototypical man. You couldn't draw somebody 6'7", 323, with a tremendous wingspan and very good feet. So, yes, he looks like he's your left tackle. Mason Murphy, probably going to be your right tackle. He's started a good bit of the last 3 years for USC, although he's struggled the last couple of years with some penalties and pass protection. So he may have a challenge there, but he's definitely a veteran who knows what it takes to play at this level.
Let's see what else happened while I was. Oh, Diego Pavia may have really thrown a wrench into who can play college
football.
Yeah, who can throw,
just
who can
college
play
football,
who can play college football or college athletics, and how long they can do it, and for what reasons? Like I don't know. It's fascinating.
It's very distressing to me. I think this is going to be something I don't know how this is not going to tremendously affect football. And I can see almost another level of football being created from this, because Pavia's big argument is that junior college players aren't, there is no NIL for junior college players. And that's where he's coming from. This has affected his ability to be able to make a living. And he feels like he should have two more years since he played 2 years of junior college. But you're right. How is this? It's hard to imagine this isn't going to lead to players just saying, "Well, as long as a team wants to pay me to play, why should I be limited to a number of years?" And I don't know that the NCAA is going to be able to do much about this. I just don't foresee them winning this in court. But what will that mean to kids coming out of high school? Will they need to go to junior college and play for 2 years so that they can be as big and physically mature as the players who have played 2 years of junior college? And as ridiculous as this sounds, I mean, I absolutely laughed when I first heard this, and we'll see if what Barrett has to say about this. But when I heard somebody saying, "Hey, what about players that have gone on to the NFL and either haven't made it or still had a little extra time?" And I thought, well, there's no way, because there are rules, but what do the NCAA rules mean? They're not laws. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, are you going to be seeing some, 33-year-old former NFL players playing on college teams?
I mean, that's the thing. Does the NCAA have any appetite to enforce its eligibility rules if challenged in court? Like, and then that opens up, yeah, is anyone eligible and is everyone eligible for infinity?
As long as
are we talking about infinite eligibility in college football and in college athletics, and what could that mean? Because I think that would be, I mean, it seems like it would take away
so much of the things that people say they love about college athletics?
Absolutely, it would. I don't know. I mean, I hope not. But boy, it sure looks like we could be headed that way if this holds up. I mean, it's a temporary injunction for Pavia, it's funny. Most people that I've heard are like, "Oh, this is great." I just don't see it that way. Maybe I'm just too old school. But we'll talk about that.
I get that it's fun to imagine some legendary former player like coming back and playing for you now. But it's like, That's gonna be everywhere, and like where, like you, I think you raised the practical question of like where will the new, like will it become a thing that yeah, it's full of people in their 20s and 30s, like and there won't be like, is that the, again, not to turn this into like science fiction, not to be on like a we're on a slippery slope to this, but I think the Pavia thing opens the door to like who is eligible. And who is, I guess, more importantly, who is ineligible to play college football?
Yeah, who's gonna be the Rich Hill of college football? Who's played for 15 different colleges?
It's a brave new world, right?
Yeah, I guess it's new.
I don't know. We'll see.
It's definitely new.
Because we don't know. I mean, right now it just means. Although I would say, and do you disagree with this, Bill? Like, I mean, at the very least, if you are if you're someone who went to junior college and you're currently a D1 college athlete, football player, basketball player, whatever, if I would think you have at least your junior college years of eligibility back at the D1 level. Right now, right? Like if I were,
yeah. I don't think that's fair. I just don't think that's right.
Well, no, right, and fair are different things in this situation, Bill.
Like, well, I guess.
Right would be like, will it be enforced that way? And fair would be, you know, sort of like how you feel, right? Like, I would think that, like,
We're just going to have to get rid of the student thing at all. It doesn't matter if you're related to a school or not. It's just wherever you can play. That's the way, direction we're headed. And this was supposed to be tied to college degree, you know, to being a student athlete. So I don't know how many of those, you know, we expect to see in the future. Hey, if we want to get Barrett, we probably ought to get on it.
Good call. Let's take a break and get to Barrett. You're listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill at home, recovering, still on the mend. So we'll do a home edition of the show for Bill. And I believe, Do we have both? We're gonna trust technology to bring us both Bill Cameron and our good buddy Barrett Salee.
Well, I'm here,
gentlemen. What's up?
Oh, okay, excellent. And we have Barrett. We have liftoff here.
We have liftoff, and I am lifting off here at in Notre Dame, trying to stay warm. But man, what a scene it is up here. This is gorgeous from this morning with all the snow to now all the tailgaters out in full force. This is it's a pretty cool setting for the first ever home playoff or first on-campus playoff game.
Remarkable. Barrett, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were hearing, you know, how ridiculously low the price of tickets we're getting for the Tennessee-Ohio State game. This one's a different story, though. This game is, I was talking about it yesterday, how huge this is for the state of Indiana and for Indiana, the school itself, to be playing Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's massive. I think for the state of Indiana to have this sort of spotlight on it really shows, it shows off just the passion here. I mean, honestly, I've never been here before. I've never been to South Bend. I don't think I've ever met an Indiana fan. It's been awesome to see, you know, around town, just how many people are here. I mean, I'm looking out right now and there's like a little patio by the press box and I'm looking out at this massive lot, and honestly, it looks like it's Woodstock. I mean, it's crazy. And then, you know, with the snow this morning and how beautiful the campus was, I mean, it's perfect. It's a perfect scene for college football. It's a great way to start the playoff. And I mean, it's awesome. I mean, honestly, I didn't think it would be like this, but it is, it's like the Grove with snow, which is hard to imagine, but that's what it looks like.
I mean, fascinating. I think that the playoff matchups this weekend and this game in particular. I mean, Indiana maybe the best story of any team in the college football playoff. When you think about the unlikelihood, you know, the unlikely nature of this team, considering where they were a year ago when they went and found, when they went and Googled their new head coach.
Yes, and they did Google, and now and look where it is. I mean, look, Kurt Cignetti has been awesome. He was awesome at James Madison last year. He knows what he's doing, and it's not a fluke that they got here. They are well coached. They're very solid. They, you know, benefited from the transfer portal. And look, are they as talented as Notre Dame? No. Have they benefited from a schedule that's rather forgiving? Yeah, of course. But how many teams this year have had stumbles where you just didn't expect it, right? It's one thing to, you know, have a high ceiling. It's another thing to have a high floor. And I think in this day and age of college football, the latter is more important. So Kurt Cignetti, the ability that he has to keep his teams disciplined and not veer too far off, not get too high, not get too low, is a big reason why they're here, and they deserve it.
And then there's Notre Dame, you know, a team that I think a lot of folks suspected would make the playoff when they saw the makeup of this team and the path that they had to not necessarily saying Notre Dame wasn't challenged this year either. They opened the season with a win in College Station, but it's a team that, you know, I think there is some skepticism from folks about whether or not this is a true contender, and I think there are others that are totally sold on the group out of South Bend.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you define as a contender, because, I mean, Notre Dame, they're they're the best boring team in college football. They don't do anything that's, you know, super flashy, but they just get the job done, and they do it consistently. And, you know, the Northern Illinois game, you know, it's week two. Look at how they've developed since then. It's impressive to see what they've done. And, you know, are they national championship contenders? Can they win the whole thing? Yeah, they can, because we've seen every other team outside of Oregon have those games where you're just like, what the heck just happened? And Notre Dame had that too, but that was so long ago before this team had their identity, and now they know it with Riley Leonard and Jeremiah Love, with that multidimensional rushing attack. They've done a great job. They deserve to be here, and based on, you know, the definition of this season, the landscape that this season has sort of established, they're as likely as anybody else. It's a good team, and man, next week if they beat Indiana tonight, Notre Dame versus Georgia is going to be very interesting.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Georgia knows they don't have Carson Beck right now, but you know Notre Dame's got to get by Indiana, a team that a lot of people have questioned because of their schedule all year long. But, I mean, they were right there with Ohio State just before the end of the half, and then things got out of hand. I see this one as a game that could be very tight and pretty close throughout. The teams are not too dissimilar, really. I mean, they usually don't beat themselves by making mistakes.
Yes, and that's the big question today on this stage. Does that change? My gut feeling is no. It won't change just because the way they're coached, the way, you know, they never get too high, never get too low, and both coaches seem to be on an even keel all the time. So, you know, I think it's certainly evenly matched. I mean, the weather is going to be a little bit of a factor. It's not snowing now, but it's, you know, obviously extremely cold. And, you know, that with two teams from the Midwest, it doesn't really change anything. You know, they both do the same things. That, you know, but it's not going to be pleasant. And that's the one thing is, you know, does one mistake change everything? Because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, teams practiced in this stuff now if it gets cold or if it starts to snow, if it rains, every team just goes in their indoor facility. So, you know, nobody likes doing this, so it is going to be a little foreign to everybody, but I think both of these coaches know how to get these teams prepared.
Well, I think you had more regional teams too 10, 15 years ago, right? Now you have teams that are made up of, I mean, California has you know, players everywhere, and Florida has players everywhere. I don't know how many of these guys necessarily grew up in these sort of conditions.
Yeah, not many. You know, maybe more for Indiana than Notre Dame, because Notre Dame recruits a little bit more nationally. But and then, you know, it's, everyone says it's football weather. Everyone kind of hates playing in the cold. It hurts a little more no matter who you are when you get hit.
Is there a matchup you really like of the three tomorrow?
Yeah, I can't wait to watch SMU Penn State. You know, James Franklin called Kevin Jennings a version of Lamar Jackson. I mean, he's not that good, but he plays exactly like him. Like, he's not to Lamar Jackson's level, but he plays a lot like him. And SMU's defense, man, we saw what that defense was capable of the last three quarters against Clemson. I firmly believe one roughing the passer call that should never have been called really drastically changed that game. SMU really dominated from the outset. You know, I think they get the job done against Penn State. I think that,
wow,
you know, if it's going to be a shootout, it's going to be a track meet. I would trust Kevin Jennings and Rhett Lashley over Drew Aller. Not knowing, though, that, you know, Penn State did get into a track meet with Oregon last time out, but that's the exception, not the rule.
Wow, that would be a pretty big upset in that one. But I understand exactly what you're saying. I could see that. Hey, before we run out of time, got to get your thoughts. We were just talking about this a few minutes ago, and there's no question this is something that could change. And we've had such unbelievable change in college football and college athletics over the last few years. But the Diego Pavia temporary injunction, I mean, what kind of you talk about a Pandora's box where junior college players all get to add to their time. The current players, there will be hundreds of players, probably thousands of players, when you look at every sport, that have gone to junior college. What is that going to do in your mind to college athletics?
Yeah, it changes a lot. It's, first of all, it's going to spurn a bunch of lawsuits for guys who don't have their eligibility anymore. But honestly, I don't understand the reasoning to allow it, right? Like, what, it's junior college, and you choose, you know, it's not like there's this, you know, obvious blind spot that the NCAA ignored for so long. I mean, it's Steve Sarkisian had a great quote on this. He's like, it doesn't make any sense. You'll have guys playing college football until they're 30 on a consistent basis. And, sure, and to a point, he's right. I mean, I'd love to know the rationale. To me, it seems like a knee-jerk reaction to a problem that really wasn't that much of a problem to begin with until Diego Pavia decided to file a lawsuit. Instead of, you know, having a bunch of billable hours, they just said, screw it, we'll have a rule that allows it and deal with the repercussions later. But, I mean, man, if you're Cam Newton, you're like, dang, I could add another year.
Yeah, well, no, do you wonder,
well,
like,
you know,
that?
What I've heard, go ahead, Bill. What I've heard is that this is all related to NIL, that Diego Pavia is saying, look, I didn't get NIL, and junior college players don't get NIL. It's all about the NIL that college football offers, so therefore everybody should get 4 years in addition to whatever else they're doing, but they should be able to get 4 years at least of college football NIL.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but a lot of kids that go to junior college, A, don't need to get it anyway. Like, I don't know. It's
right.
It seems like things are swaying way more toward the player than maybe anybody really thought it would, that it would at some point. So, I don't know. But good for Diego Pavia to get another year. I'm sure Hugh Freeze is not very happy about that.
You know, we wonder if it blows a hole in the NCAA's appetite or their desire to enforce eligibility rules.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at some point, they're just going to say, screw it. I mean, they're going to, at one point, there's going to have to be an a commissioner of some kind and say, hey, look, we're going to revamp all the rules. We're going to rewrite everything. It's going to be a completely different organization. So you're going to protect it from other legal issues and just basically start from scratch, because patching it up the way that sort of is happening right now, it just doesn't seem to benefit anybody.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, the next thing I can imagine, I can see high schoolers suing the NCAA because there aren't spots for them that should be available because of the guys that are sticking around extra years.
Exactly. But and they can go to junior college and not lose eligibility, but then what happens to the guys behind them and the guys behind those guys? It's just going to be just a never-ending logjam that honestly got started because of the free COVID year.
Barrett, we got to we're up against a break here, so we appreciate you joining us. Tell everyone where we can find your coverage of tonight and everything going on in the world of college athletics.
Yeah, we'll have coverage tonight and all day tomorrow and into Sunday on Outkick and SiriusXM. And then College Football Smothered and Covered, we'll have a group show tonight. We'll have coverage tomorrow across all three games, and you can follow that on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, all those different places.
Merry Christmas, Barrett.
Thank you, guys. Merry Christmas as well.
Barrett Salee, always appreciate Barrett and his contribution to the show. Let's take a break. We'll be back. This is The Drive.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back to The Drive, Friday edition, final edition of the holidays. It's the Christmas party here on The Drive. Bill is calling in from home. Drew is at the controls, and I'm back after a week-long adventure at the Harrah's Cherokee Casino and Resort in Cherokee, North Carolina. I did not lose my shirt, Bill. Like I in fact, you know, managed
to.
Yeah, for all parties involved, that's good. Like I was able to I played a little bit, but you know, it's just it doesn't take, for me at least, it doesn't take like a ton of money for a game or a, you know, especially a wager at a sports book to be interesting. I know some people, you know, want like a ton of action or something, but I'll throw a teensy bit on a game at a book, and that's plenty to keep my interest. It's a very very nice spot in the middle of North Carolina.
Well, that's good. And how was the weather up there?
It was, we were inside. You know how casinos can be. Like, you know, the event.
Well, I know, but I still had an idea of what was going on.
Oh, for sure. But you know how, like, but the event was, I want to be clear, like, the event was in the casino. It wasn't, like, in a nearby arena or something. Like, it was all pretty self-contained and indoor. But it was at times really pleasant. It was at times very rainy and unpleasant looking outside. It's a place that can get pretty serious in the winter in some parts of North Carolina, and I think that that is, you know, Cherokee is, that's about 45 minutes from Asheville, and they can see below freezing temperatures and some real snow.
Yeah, I was just communicating with my sister who's in Black Mountain, and they're expecting some pretty soon, so you may have timed that pretty well.
Yeah, we got out of there, you know. Yeah, right on time.
Let's see, a couple of the things thought we might as well get to. I mentioned that Auburn has had two coaches leave. They have replaced Josh Aldridge. At least his spot was replaced by T.J. Rushing, who had been an assistant for D.J. Durkin at Texas A&M. For the 2 years before Durkin came to Auburn, brought him as a off-field assistant this past year. Now there had been, well, I've seen different stories, people, you know, projecting what T.J. Rushing is going to coach. But now with the departure of Charles Kelly, I wonder if that might change some people's thoughts, because Rushing is a guy who had been a secondary coach with D.J. Durkin. He had coached cornerbacks, I believe, at Texas A&M, and the initial report was that Rushing would come in and take over the duties of coaching the edges that Josh Aldridge was coaching. And then I saw another report that said, well, he would coach the edges and the nickels. So I'm not really sure, but he will be on the staff. And now, he could slot into the spot that Charles Kelly had. or he could, you know, Auburn could shift some other guys around. But there is at least one spot with Charles Kelly leaving to take the head coaching job at Jacksonville State.
And I don't know how much you guys went into TJ Rushing earlier this week, but like he's a
The word didn't even come out until about 10 o'clock last night that he was going to be the guy.
Oh, excellent! Yeah. So TJ Rushing, if you're unfamiliar, he played for Jim Harbaugh about 20 years ago at Stanford. Brief NFL career as a special teamer, won a Super Bowl with the Colts. Yep. His rookie year in the NFL, has been a coach, Arizona State, Memphis, A&M, and now at Auburn. He followed DJ Durkin from A&M to Auburn. So a couple of connections there with Durkin and Harbaugh. And so this is a guy who I would think secondary. But if Auburn has I guess we'll see what they end up doing.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things they could do. Obviously, DJ Durkin has a lot of experience there. He's been a linebacker's guy, though. So Auburn will need somebody to coach the edges. I've seen one report that Vontrell King-Williams could take the entire defensive line. So there's some flexibility there. We'll see how they do. Again, the news about Charles Kelly is one that's tough. I mean, it's great for Charles, an opportunity for him to be a head coach at Jack State, where Rick Rodriguez has done a really good job there and left that program in good shape. And Charles, of course, with the such great contacts in the state of Alabama. But now Auburn will need another coach. I think T.J. Rushing's known as a pretty good recruiter, but I'm sure Hugh Freeze will be looking for another as good a recruiter as he can bring in to also coach to fill that spot vacated by Charles Kelly.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Auburn and how the activity in the portal this week. We'll also preview Auburn Purdue tomorrow. Big matchup for Auburn men's basketball against a top tier Big Ten opponent, and we'll see if they have Jani Broome available tomorrow in Birmingham. You're listening to the Friday edition, the last one before the holidays, the Friday edition of The Drive.
Call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Friday edition of The Drive, Christmas party edition of The Drive. Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Bill, you got a favorite Christmas. How about of like, not even contemporary, like going back to the 60s and 70s even. Like, do you got a favorite pop Christmas song?
Oh, sure. Please Come Home for Christmas. No question.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like most versions, but I especially like the Eagles. But I mean, Charlie Brown's the original. They've been that's probably my favorite.
I will vote for Darlene Love's Christmas parenthetical. Baby, Please Come Home.
Baby, Please Come. Did you see her last night? Was it last night or night before on with Fallon?
Oh, did she renew? Because for years
she did it with Letterman.
Yeah, it was a tradition that she would perform the show with Paul Schaefer and the Letterman band, and she did it, I believe, until the show went off the air.
It was night before last. Yes, she did it. Paul Schaefer on the piano.
Yeah.
And the rest of the backup band was Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. So that was the group that, rocked the Tonight Show 2 nights ago.
Oh, that's fantastic. I will track that down because, that's one of my favorites. I also like Bruce's Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah, I do.
Like, that's a fun, I mean, there's... It's very Bruce, right? Like it's got a lot of, he's really doing his Bruce thing on it. But I really enjoy that one. And this is our last show before we break for Christmas, and last show before we learn who is going to be in the college football playoff quarterfinal.
That's right. I mean, huge day. It's hard to believe the playoffs are tonight. And their bowl game's going on right now. The Gators take the lead.
Yeah, it's 6-0. It's 6-0 at the break in that in
it
that
was.
Game.
Gators had first and goal though when I looked away a little while ago.
I'm struggling to find bandwidth for the non-playoff bowls. You know what I mean?
The only reason I knew is I heard somebody mention that DJ Lagway was struggling, and it's like, oh crap, there's a bowl game. I might as well look and see what the score is.
What do you think happens in Columbus, Ohio tomorrow?
I will not be surprised if Tennessee wins this ball game. I know Ohio State's about a 7.5-point favorite. First of all, I want to see how many Tennessee fans are there, how much orange there is in that stadium. But I don't know. I think the pressure, there's so much pressure on Ryan Day and Ohio State.
I kind of think Tennessee wins too. Like, I think, you know, if there's an upset in the first round, and this could blow up in my face, but if there's an upset in the first round, I think Tennessee's going to Ohio State and winning. And then I think that opens the door to, what do you do at Ohio State, right? Like, is that program on solid footing? Is that coach, does he have the backing of everyone he needs to have to be successful moving forward? Like, that feels like a must-win game for Ryan Day, and still, I kind of think Tennessee wins.
How crazy would this be if Ohio State loses and the Buckeyes went after Marcus Freeman?
I mean, you know the name that sticks out to me, and maybe it's just, you know, for some obvious reason, and I don't even know if he wants to coach college football, but I keep thinking Mike Vrabel is the call at Ohio State if you push Ryan Day out. Maybe they don't, you know, we'll see if you want to stay in the family or whatever. And there are NFL teams that reportedly have Vrabel number one on their list this offseason too. But I think Mike Vrabel would be a phenomenal coach at a college football superpower, especially at his alma mater. And it's probably going to take his alma mater to bring him to college football. But I think he would do a bang up job at Ohio State.
That's Marcus Freeman's alma mater too.
That's true. Marcus and Marcus Freeman's doing it. You know, and I guess the difference is, like,
seems crazy, but I mean, look, you saw Brian Kelly leave Notre Dame for LSU.
That's true. And I guess, you know, Vrabel is technically, I mean, unemployed's not the right word, but he's between jobs right now in coaching. Freeman has a situation that seems pretty solid, but like you said, we thought Brian Kelly was in a situation that felt pretty solid, and then he bolted for the South. So, you know, I guess it would be a matter of, you know, I wonder if Ohio State feels like they could get them both, and they have to choose which one they would rather have. But I think they have.
I'm sure they feel like they could get whoever they want, but we'll see how real that is.
Yeah, the job has to open up first, but you know, it gets back to Tennessee, Ohio State being, you know, it has the stakes feel higher than just a playoff game, especially on the Ohio State side. As important as a national championship would be for all parties involved.
Yeah, I agree. So that one, I'm probably way off on this. I'm definitely in the minority. I think Clemson's going to play Texas a lot tougher than most people feel.
Yeah, you know, you are someone who, and I think you're absolutely right about this, all season long, and especially after the way they no-showed the Georgia game, like, it's like, where are Texas's wins?
Michigan has got to be their best win now that Bandy finished 6-6. You know, Michigan at least finished 7-5 and beat Ohio State.
And I get, look,
but that Michigan team they played in week two is nothing like the Michigan team that's going to play Alabama.
And just like people said with SMU, you can only play the teams that are on your schedule this season. Like, you don't get to choose that. But with Texas, I think it's totally – and I'm not saying Texas shouldn't be in the playoff or shouldn't be hosting a game. Look, Texas earned their spot. But if you're wondering why Clemson could play them tough, one reason is because Texas hasn't beaten a team as good as Clemson all season.
Nope, they haven't. Now, Clemson hasn't beaten anybody near as good as Texas either. But I think it could be interesting if Klubnik has a good game. But that's a big if.
Clemson beat SMU.
That's true. No, you're right.
Clemson's beaten a playoff team. Like, Clemson beat a playoff team this year to get there. Texas didn't.
No, you're right.
So I'm there with you. Look, maybe it's all chalk. Maybe the home teams roll, and this is like, you know, it starts to feel like, you know, that round of the NFL playoffs that the road teams never win. But I think Tennessee's got a puncher's chance. I think Clemson could absolutely play Texas close. And I thought Barrett made a really compelling argument.
Barrett picking SMU. Yeah. Straight up over Penn State.
I think, you know, Barrett made a really compelling argument for SMU winning as a road team against Penn State. And tonight, I mean, Indiana is a total wild card in this in this college football playoff. And Notre Dame is a team that I think if they get hot, they could play. Although I guess, you know, Notre Dame, another team that did not beat a playoff team to get here, right? So I think they've got something to prove in the field, but they're a team that, you know, that has a lot of talent and a lot of key spots.
Oh yeah, you're right. I mean, looking forward to it. It is crazy, but here we are, playoff time again. We're closing in on the final hour of the drive for our pre-Christmas. We're off all next week, so hey, we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. Sponsored by Skybar.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive, the Christmas party edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Bill Cameron on the phone joining us from home. Drew at the controls. Yeah, I was out all week traveling, you know, exploring the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort in Cherokee, North Carolina. A very, very nice part of the country and a very nice spot that they've got set up there in Cherokee Country in North Carolina. Got to see. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Bill, and I want to Google the young lady's name because I want to make sure I've got this right. I saw coincidentally in the game before Auburn, or the game before Troy played Toledo the first night, there was a high school game going on featuring an Auburn commitment. A woman, yeah, from I believe it's Hebron, North Carolina, and they have they played Cherokee, and it was practically a home game for Cherokee High School because it's nearby. But there's a commitment to Johnny Harris's class, Jakara Butler is her name. She goes to Hebron Christian up in North Carolina, and I saw her. She is a 6'1" post who gets every rebound and can jump. She's a very, very impressive athlete.
Well, that's good. That's really cool that you got a chance.
I was watching the teams play before Auburn, and Hebron Christian seemed, you know, I don't know very much about girls high school basketball in North Carolina, but I was watching Hebron Christian, and like three different players stood out to me, and so I nudged the coach next to me and point that out, and he says, yeah, she's going to Miami, and she's going to George Washington. And she's got it's a team with four D1 players in the starting lineup.
Wow!
And one of them is Jakara Butler, who's going to Auburn. And there were some Alabama teams in the tournament as well, maybe Pelham. I saw some familiar names up on the bracket there, but it was cool to see, like you said, cool to see someone who has committed to Auburn up there in high school action.
Well, it is holiday tournament time, so that's cool to know that there were some Alabama teams there and some at least one Auburn commitment. So that's really cool. Speaking of Holiday basketball, Auburn, a 9.5-point favorite tomorrow. And that is, you know, not knowing if Jani Broome's going to be available or not.
Right. And I don't, I would, I mean, I guess I would probably predict that you don't see Broome, but I also would not guarantee it. And it would be, I mean, he is, it would be a testament to his conditioning and his, you know, his desire to play if he can be out there. And it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be a knock against those things if he missed this game with a very serious looking shoulder injury. And so, and there's, like you said, in the first hour, there's the real risk of re-aggravation, right? Like there's that when you,
I mean,
shoulders are a, that's a fickle part of the body.
Oh, I mean, it's, once you've injured it, it's more likely. Now Bruce Pearl did say that it's not the same injury that he had a year ago. So that is good. Remember he wore that brace for a few games last year and didn't really seem affected much by that. So it's really good news thus far that he's going to be able to just rehab it and be back. But look, let's face it. I mean, with Auburn's schedule up to this point, and I'm not saying that you don't care if you don't win tomorrow, but if Auburn were to to hold Jani out and say they lose that ball game to Ohio State, that's not going to hurt them at all as far as in the eyes of anyone as far as strength of schedule, RPI, or when it gets to tournament time.
No, in fact, and again, like not to say, like what I am absolutely not saying, Bill, is that like, oh, good thing for Auburn that like Jani Broome might have to miss a game or two, like because you want Jani Broome out there every game to improve, you know, I mean, just the for the impact he makes on every possession on both ends of the floor when he's in the game. He would be National Player of the Year right now, and deservedly so, because of the impact that he has on the game. Without him, though, you get to, I mean, if he's not able to go tomorrow, then Auburn gets a chance to play without Jani Broome and see what the rest of the team can do against a quality opponent in a game that isn't necessarily, well, this game will decide if you're the national champion or this game has a huge impact on the race to be SEC regular season champion. It's a non-conference game in a neutral site that you might, you might have to be without your best player. And if so, it gives you a chance to play high leverage minutes with everybody else. You see what that Dylan and Chaney lineup looks like in big moments. You see what the Chaney and Turtle front court could look like in big moments. Which and I mean the I know you should take a victory lap right now on this one, Bill, because I mean you were telling people all offseason about Chaney Johnson.
Oh yeah, the thing is he has worked so hard, and you could see it. I really felt down the stretch last year. You could see his confidence building. And he has become so dangerous. I mean, Justin was talking about it yesterday, how unbelievable he is, how consistent he is, you know, around the basket. He's a guy that's shooting well over 70% from inside 6 feet. And, I mean, it's not just dunks. He's making the moves to create openings and going up and showing nice touch around the rim. I mean, He's a very good athlete. I mean, Bruce last year kept telling people he may be the most athletic player on the team, and people sort of roll their eyes. But you see him now, and you see the confidence that he has. He had the opportunity to play some extended minutes the other night. He scores 26 points in 30 minutes against Georgia State on 12 of 14 from the floor.
Talking with our good pal Bill Cameron here, who is joining us on the phone for the Friday edition of the Drive. The Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. I want to thank Southeastern Industrial Contractors for sponsoring the text box 334-564-1840. They also sponsor the podcast available wherever you get your favorite podcast. We had Barrett Silley in the first hour talking the first round of the college football playoff. The uncertainty in college football and college athletics following not just the Pavia ruling, but the Pavia ruling being the latest development in this sort of new era of eligibility and college athletics. And then you've got also Auburn. You know, the changes Auburn is making, and there have been a lot of changes Auburn has made to the roster and coaching staff in the last week or so.
Yeah, Auburn now with 12 players added through the transfer portal. The latest is a place kicker, Connor Gibbs, out of Southern Miss. We understand he is being brought in. He will come in as a walk-on with an opportunity to earn a scholarship, but he was 10 of 13 as a 10 of 13 on field goals this past year with a long of 59 yards for Southern Miss. Only attempted 10 extra points and was 7 of 10 kicking extra points. I was told that he had that they were blocked because of breakdowns in blocking there. You would think somebody who goes 10 of 13 on field goals, including a 59 yarder, would have a better percentage there on extra points. But I think what this tells you is you have to be prepared to be without Alex McPherson. And I still think Towns Magoo is going to be an excellent place kicker. I don't know if Ian Bashan is back or how much more eligibility he has, but you definitely need another kicker, especially if it looks like we may not have Alex McPherson anymore.
And you know what? And if Towns Magoo still needs time to develop, you do have, especially with the veteran coming in, you have the redshirt option there, or you can let him continue to kick off and have the young man from Southern Miss as more of a specialist, just kicking the field goals. But no, Auburn addressing the question of, you know, how much competition they want for the kicking jobs next year by going out and getting somebody with experience as the primary option for an FBS team.
Yeah, so I mean, I really think that Auburn has done well in the portal thus far. We were talking about it a little earlier. I mean, two quarterbacks now, and they apparently have offered a third quarterback, the quarterback from Charlotte this past year, and he was a true freshman who started, I think, the last 8 or 9 ball games for Charlotte, and he's been offered Deshaun Purdy. I had to try to think of his name. Deshaun Purdy, a 6'4", 220-pound true sophomore who is from Baltimore, where, boy, Auburn's gotten some connections there in Baltimore, haven't they?
Yeah, the
transfer this year.
The DMV, just in general. You know, I would. You know what? And that gets back to when Hugh Freeze was at Liberty. Like, when Hugh Freeze was at Liberty, he recruited Maryland and Virginia very hard, and a lot of the guys that he brought with him recruited North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, especially the Washington, D.C. Metro and the Baltimore Metro, and that's where, I mean, that's how Auburn knew about McLeod, that's how Auburn knew about Eugene Asante, or not Asante, McLeod and... there's other Maryland connections in there in that group, and so this is another recruit from that greater area.
Yeah, and of course DJ Durkin has really good contacts up there in Maryland as well. But anyway, this young man has been offered by Georgia, North Carolina, among others, and Florida, as a matter of fact. And he hasn't scheduled a visit to Auburn, but that tells you that Hugh Freeze is serious about having four quarterbacks on his roster. But yeah, and the other reason is he's a guy that can be in the spring, because we know that Ashton Daniels, the Stanford quarterback, will be finishing up his degree at Stanford. He won't be able to be in school until the summer. So you'd like to have more than just two scholarship quarterbacks. It would be a great opportunity, obviously, for Deuce Knight and Jackson Arnold. But you'd like to have a third guy that can get some work and be learning the system to be able to go through the spring.
Ian Vachon, I believe, has 1 year of eligibility remaining. I think he played 2 years at Southern and now spent 1 year at Auburn, I believe. Yeah, you know, and he could be in the competition as well, and he's got
didn't know what his plans are.
And without knowing anything about Ian Vachon's future, he has a pretty incredible moment in Auburn history. Right, like he's got that field goal to tie the game against A&M, which
that is right.
I mean, I think is going to be like the moments from that A&M game will be shown on the Jumbotron and on the new scoreboard and throughout Auburn football promotional materials for a long, long time. And I think you know, as you know, I think, you know, I think I made this point on the Observer podcast, Bill, but like you get the sense, maybe I said it here too, but like you get the sense that if the freeze era indeed has turned a corner and the 25 season is more successful than his previous two, that win against A&M was sort of the start of that turnaround.
Oh, there's no question about it. That was a much needed win for Auburn, because they'd had such a streak of being unable to beat ranked teams, beat good teams, and especially at home, which was really odd.
And I watched it from a sushi bar in downtown Anchorage, Alaska, with people looking at me like I was crazy, eating reindeer fried rice and cheering on a college football team on the other side of the planet.
Man, that is, well, I mean, you know, Auburn appreciates people watching from wherever they are. But yeah, you're right. They hope that that was the start of a turning point. And there was some story today. Did you see the post from J.G. Tate a little earlier about Malcolm Simmons?
No, what's the word?
When I saw that there was a post about Malcolm Simmons, I went, oh my goodness, what's going on? J.G. says, good news, he's reached an agreement on a new NIL deal, and word is he is very, very open to being part of an offense that could feature both him and Eric Singleton. So that has a lot of people wondering, you know, is that maybe something that has been holding up Singleton's announcement, making sure that Malcolm Simmons was fine with the two of them being able to be used together?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to bet too heavily on youth and potential in college football these days, because, you know, there's a lot of proven options. There can be proven options in the portal, but you don't want to throw potential and youth away. And in the case of Malcolm Simmons, it feels like the sky is the limit as far as how good he could
be.
And his explosiveness as a true friend. Like, it's hard to look fast against SEC defenses. And Malcolm Simmons was out there. I guess you're sort of waiting for, you know, the technique to match up, to catch up to that raw ability. But it's, I mean, Bill, we talked about it with Malcolm Simmons. Like, you see him going in motion pre-snap, and you go, well, who's that? Like, what's that? Like, because he's doing that faster than anyone you've ever seen. And it seems to also be like at a, you know, and he seems to be jogging while he's doing it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a smooth speed. It's smooth fast. There's no question about that. But it's crazy, though. Just a couple of years ago, can you imagine it being a big deal that a freshman is returning for his sophomore year? It is now.
I mean, you're right. It does seem. I mean, it's you know, that brings up something that was that's been on the docket for a few. Drew, do we need to break, or are we okay? I'll tell you what, when we come back, Bill, I want to ask you about the portal windows and sort of what you would do, you know, if you had the magic wand, because I know there's been a lot of, especially from coaches who coach in the playoff, there's been a lot of frustration about the timeline and the fact that guys are having to make choices to leave their playoff team potentially to take full advantage of the portal, and whether or not there should even be a December portal window. I think it's an interesting set of questions being asked by some of the most prominent coaches in all of college football. We got Bill Cameron on the phone. This is the final episode of The Drive before Christmas. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls. Stick around. We will be back.
The Drive. Some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Friday edition of The Drive, final edition before the holiday season. Merry Christmas to everyone listening, and hopefully you have a happy, healthy, and safe holiday season as you know, I mean that was, I know you asked me earlier, Bill, like we did not run into much wintry weather. It rained at times, but again, you know, most of the event was solidly indoor there at the Cherokee. And so I did not run into the, I mean, it was hardly Montana or Alaska when it comes to my experience with hitting some ice. And we've got Harrisonburg, Virginia at the end of the month. I'm going to JMU next weekend, and we've got App State early in January. So I think I will see a little bit more.
I think you will.
A little bit more snow and ice before the, I'm going to take that bus ride up and down the mountain to Boone. And it is, it's always an adventure.
Yeah, good luck on those, but at least so far so good.
Yeah, no, it's been really this season, and again, you know, really appreciate Troy bringing me along for so many of these games because I've been able to see every game so far this season, and I've gotten to go to some really exciting places. Exotic places I probably wouldn't have visited otherwise. Anytime soon between Anchorage and Bozeman and Inabina, Mississippi. Lots of different environments I've been able to go. I've been able to go check out. So Bill, we were talking before the break about the chatter out there about the portal and sort of what is to be done. And there doesn't, without making pretty serious changes to something, whether it's the postseason schedule or the ability for players to have movement in December, like it feels like there's no easy answer here.
No, I don't think there is. I mean, you can't really change the playoff times to be able to try to get the games done, before well into the spring term. And the spring term is the key reason why I don't think you can change the portal, because these players want to be able, and schools want the players to be able to go through spring ball, go through winter workouts and spring practice. And that means they have to be in the portal in time to make a decision by the time the deadlines arrive for players to be enrolled in spring classes. So I don't see how you can make much of a change. I think it's better now than it was, because at least the early signing period has been moved up ahead of the portal. You don't have that to deal with. But let's face it, I mean, it's actually been beneficial for Auburn here in this transfer portal to not have to be concerned about game preparation. They're just concerned about roster reparation.
Right, and it's also helped Auburn, I suspect, that there are a couple teams in the SEC that are in the playoff, and they don't know who's going to leave their roster when that window opens and what they're going to have to do in the portal. Tennessee or Georgia or Texas could be shopping for a position player that Auburn, the kind of position player that Auburn has landed in the portal so far, but they didn't know they were going to be in the market for that guy. And so, it benefits the non-playoff teams, and some would say inordinately benefits the non-playoff teams, the current window. But like you said, Bill, the real problem with this specifically, it feels like to me, the real problem is the playoff and the championship are too late in the calendar. Like you need to, the solution would be crown your champion on Christmas night in college football
or New Year's Day.
Your champion on New Year's Day in college football. But I don't think the TV networks want that. I don't think the bowls, who are still, who still get a vote seemingly in what happens here. I think the TV network, ESPN would be.
I wonder about the bowls being that concerned with it, because I mean, think about it. Back before we used to have playoffs, that's when the final games were. They were New Year's Day or New Year's night, and then your national champion was crowned in the next day or so. So I think the bowls would probably go for it. I just don't know that TV They like it being stretched out and going on into mid-January.
But to me, it seems like, and I know it creates a ton of problems, but the solution would be, yeah, crown the champion earlier. Like, get the thing done with, and then you can open the portal and I know it would require a lot of like holiday season recruiting, which is also, you know, not ideal, but you know, I think if you want, you know, you want everyone to have a chance in the portal window, including teams that make the playoff, and you want players to be able to decide before the end of the second week of January where they're going to school in the spring. Like that would need to, like those two things are in direct conflict with each other while the playoff games are in January.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're already seeing games week zero. We have week zero games. And this is the second or third year where we've had two open dates. So, you know, just maybe you could push everything back, bring everything, start it a week earlier, and have championship games Thanksgiving weekend, and then you'd be able to get everything done. Look, the FCS does it. Why can't FBS?
I mean, is it I know some people might cite, like, the safety of playing games in the South
so
in August.
Is it less dangerous for FCS players to be playing as many games in a short of time?
Are these playoff games we're going to see this weekend safer than playing a night game in the South in August? Like, I don't know. I think it's a fair thing to, and I guess people would, because I think it's a. It feels like the system, and it would need pretty dramatic change. What you made the point earlier, Bill, but you can't just get rid of the December window.
No, you absolutely can't. I mean, it was bad enough. It was worse when players were entering the portal during the season. It's better now, at least, to have it at the end of the year and try to give them time to be able to find a school by January, so that if they're going to be somewhere else next year, let them be able to go through the winter workouts. I don't see how you're going to be able to do anything that's going to be more beneficial than that, having the month of December basically be your major transfer window.
Yeah, making everyone wait until May feels like it would create like a lot of hostage situations.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of situations where there's just a guy who wants out or a team that wants a guy out. And it just, I think that it's unfortunate because, yeah, I mean, look, we saw it with Washington this past year. I know there was a coaching change too, but Washington had a lot of roster turnover after the championship game,
and
they didn't have a ton of options in the portal to go and address it with. So it was like, you know, they were sort of left holding the bag. And granted, they got to go to the championship game, but it was like it was a real. I mean, the next guy stepped into a situation that was in need of some pretty dramatic work.
You know, some people would say, well, hey, that's good for the struggling teams. It gives them a better opportunity, but it's almost penalizing teams for going. The deeper you go, the more you're penalized because there are fewer options for you to be able to go and recover and, you know, refill your roster.
And presumably, if a player from a team that makes a deep playoff run goes in the portal, there are a lot of teams that are going to find a home for him. So it's
the
players will be fine. It's the program they're leaving that is going to be in, because it's not as though the portal suddenly, it's not as though someone could say, like, hypothetically, Bill, imagine there was I'm trying to think about there's an Auburn player that would want to wait and see what happens, you know, after the portal opens for Texas, right? Well, they can't do that if Texas makes a run. Right, like there's not like
right.
I'll jump in the portal if there's a spot for me at Texas or at Georgia. It's like, well, you can't wait until Georgia's season's over. If you're, you know, you got to make your decision before a week from now, right? When the portal closes
right.
for most teams,
the 28th, yeah.
So it just puts, and again, you could say it's the cost of doing business. It's the cost of making the playoff and succeeding in this landscape, but it does the current timeline puts the teams that make the postseason in jeopardy of having that year where you lose all your contributors and you don't really have time to find replacements.
Yeah, and the one thing I was just thinking while we were talking about this is, you know, folks talk about how similar college athletics are coming to professional sports, but no, there's some drastic differences. Hey, in professional sports, you lose these guys, there's some kind of compensation. You're going to get a draft pick. You're going to get something. You don't get anything when you lose guys. There's no guarantee you're going to be able to fill those spots. All you have is, I've got a scholarship available now.
And it's also not happening during the playoffs. Teams aren't shopping.
No.
The teams that don't make the playoffs aren't shopping for free agency for outfielders.
Yeah, can you imagine that during the Major League Baseball playoffs? Well, everybody else is a free agent, and all those teams can be signing him while you're trying to play in the playoffs and get to the World Series and win the championship.
No, it's required because, and again, I point to the primary culprit being when they decide to play college football's playoff
games. The primary culprit, Dan, is classes. Is because they're supposed to be students. If you didn't have to worry about going to school, then, oh, sure, you could change the dates to wherever you wanted.
I thought you were going to say money when you took that dramatic pause, because that's also an answer. I mean, although with the TV networks making the decisions, you could say, like, a lot of this is economically driven, because it's like, ESPN wants to get the most bang for their buck for what they're paying for these playoff games, and if they know that there's a better audience for them in prime windows in January than there are in December, you know, they're going to do it. And there are also probably too many playoff games at the moment to start the season when you start it and end it, you know, with at Christmas night or New Year's Day or something like that. So, yeah, in the meantime, I just, you know, if you're in the playoff, you got to find a way to worry about roster management while also navigating the college football playoff.
Yeah, there's not an easy solution, and I just don't know. I mean, I'm just sort of glad we're not charged with doing it. Of course, we'd take the pay that they're getting to try to figure it out right now.
We will. We'll take a break, right, Drew? All right, we will take our bottom of the hour break. Stick around. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
ESPN 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Friday edition of The Drive. Final edition of The Drive before we break next week for Christmas. We will be back the Monday following next week. And I know we're taking New Year's Day off, but we will be back, and maybe New Year's Eve as well. I think we're missing both of them because there's playoff games going on those 2 days, but we will be back. We'll be back after the holiday, after a break. These next couple of days for Christmas, we will be back in action.
We mentioned a while ago there's a bowl game going on. I don't know if you saw what just happened. Florida is comfortably ahead of Tulane right now, but one of the crazier plays you're going to see, sort of a fumble rooski kind of play. Florida was up 19-0. They had 4th and 1 at the Tulane around the 25-yard line. DJ Lagway, the snap went like between his legs, rolled on the ground. The running back picked it up and ran it in for a touchdown. And Florida's up 26-0 with 6:29 to play in the ball game. The Gators are going to cover easily. I think they were about 11.5-12 point favorites, and they have really played well down the stretch. As the seat no longer even warm, I don't think they're at Florida.
No, I think with Lagway and with Napier feeling pretty good about his ability to acquire talent around them, I think Florida could be kind of a trendy team folks going into next season. Especially, I mean, we'll see what happens, but especially like if Lagway's there and he's healthy and he seems to be both of those things right now, then they're going to be in excellent shape next year. I want to point out, programming note: we will be at ESPN 106.7, we will be throwing it to coverage of Indiana Notre Dame. That's going to be at around 6:30. So ESPN radio coverage of the first round matchup in South Bend. We will have that for you on ESPN 106.7. Tomorrow, we will have the Auburn women's game starting at 11:45, Alabama State coming to Neville Arena tomorrow morning. And then Clemson at Texas and Tennessee, Ohio State. So you can catch all that this weekend on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Here we are. We're going to be, you know, we will have the first four games knocked out by tomorrow. We talked about it a little earlier. I mean, I think we're going to see some really good ball games here this weekend. Barrett was telling us how cold it is there in South Bend. I think Indiana's got a chance to at least hang with Notre Dame, if not pull off the upset.
Should be a really interesting one. Let's get to Ed, who's on the phone, Bill.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, guys. First off, Merry Christmas to all of y'all.
Merry Christmas to you, too, Ed.
I appreciate y'all putting up with us all year, and I really hope y'all have a very good Christmas. I was going to ask you about a couple of, and then tell you just one thing, but, you know, last week we saw a few days ago, we saw where Hugh Freeze had elevated one of the assistants that I think he came in with Durkin, but
DJ Rushing.
Do you think he's going to take Charles Kelly's place as far as they didn't really say that at the time. But matter of fact, they said something else. But do you think he's going to move up to that, or you think they're going to hire somebody else?
That's his experience. Really, has been in the secondary. He's been a cornerbacks coach, and that's where Crime Dog McGriff has been. But then Crime Dog has coached both safeties and corners. I wouldn't be surprised. I would sort of think that would be the case. It was interesting when the word came out last night about TJ Rushing. The only open spot was that, there at the edge position. But, I think they've got some options, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Rushing stay in the secondary.
Okay. And the other thing I was going to tell you is just kind of comical as far as when you post something, as far as the playoffs, I had posted that, and of course this is just being a homer, okay, being an Auburn guy, but I posted that, it's going to be pulling for SMU and Arizona State, sure. For the connections, and these bombers, I had a couple of them come up there. Both of those guys are in their dream job. There's no way they're going to leave, where they're at.
Well, Kenny Dillingham is an Arizona State grad, so that might be closer to his dream job. But, no, I think Rhett Lashley is going to have the opportunity to move from SMU before very long at all.
I think so, too. And I just wish both of them, get well. But anyway, there was one other thing I was going to ask you about, but it's skipping my mind. But anyway, Merry Christmas, guys, and y'all have a great holiday.
Oh, absolutely! Merry Christmas to you too, Ed. Thanks for the call.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Something that we haven't mentioned, and we'd be remiss to do here on the final show before the holidays. Hour number two of the Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com.
Bill Cameron joining us on the phone. We got one more segment to go. Let's take a break, and we will come back to wrap things up. It is the Friday edition of the Drive.
The Drive with Bill.